Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we have some very important topics that we'll be covering on the show. I will be interviewing a Kurdish-American woman with ties to East County on how the crisis in the Kurdish province in Iraq is impacting her own family, including some chilling details on the ISIS assaults on the Kurdish people and what she believes is needed to save lives. We'll also have news on indictments of a key figure in a campaign finance scandal here in San Diego, indictments that allege bribery of a public official and more. Plus, find out why a California judge thinks you should not be able to vote on an advisory measure over campaign finance reform. And you'll hear about a rash of controversy over a bill to provide poor women with diapers for their babies, and about threats made against the author, who is a local legislator. On the lighter side, our Destination East County segment will tell you about some entertaining events happening across East County this week and next. We'll also be speaking with Deborah Emerson, the CEO of St. Madeline Sophie's Center right here in El Cajon, on their fashion show fundraiser this weekend and some innovative programs to benefit adults with developmental disabilities. So be sure to keep your dial tuned to KNSJ for today's East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso. We are recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon today. And our topic at the top of the hour today is the tragedy that's unfolding in Kurdistan, and particularly in the Kurdish province of Iraq. As we've been hearing in the news, the terrorist group ISIS, which is a splinter group of al-Qaeda, has seized the city of Shingal. There's been more than 100,000 people who have fled the city, and there are many, many of these refugees trapped on top of a mountain. 50,000, some reports are saying as many as 200,000 people have been trapped for days now without food and water. These are the Yazidis, which is one branch of the Kurdish people. There are humanitarian drops of supplies that the U.S. has begun providing, along with airstrikes against the ISIS forces. Now, we have about 5,000 Kurdish people living right here in San Diego, many of them in East County. And my very special guest today is Amina, a Kurdish-American woman with ties to East County, who has asked that we withhold her name to protect her family members who are still in Kurdistan. Amina is Kurdish, and she has family that's right there in the midst of everything that's going on. She graduated from Grossmont College and San Diego State University, and she's also a very accomplished poet who's written some very moving poetry about some of the situations that have unfolded in Kurdistan, and sadly, more of that violence is occurring today. Amina, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me here, and thank you for covering this topic on your program.
Now, first of all, how is your family right now? They are in the city of Shingal. What is the latest that they can tell us from there?
Some of my family members' family are in Shingal, but my family right now, they are in Dahok. Mm-hmm. And what we hear from Shingal, like my family member, which is my sister-in-law, her father got a call from his brother who live in Shingal. And in the night when they attacked them, he called his brother and he said, come and help us. They are here and we don't know what to do. So her brother who lives here, he told him that run away. And he said, I cannot run away. I have 6 kids. They are young and where I can go. And then they hung up. So after that, he didn't know what happened to his family there and it was chaos. Then the other day, his other brother called and said, I'm in the mountain. My family, I don't know with my family. I don't know where's my brothers. Mm-hmm. And the other day when he called back, he said, my three nephew are here, but their father and the other three not here, and we don't know where they are. So they are separated, and still the who called by his brother and who's in America is still missing with three kids.
Absolutely terrifying.
So this is kind of terrifying. I put myself in this situation. I said, if my sister or my brother would call me, I said, come help me, they are here. They're going to cut our head off. What I should do?
Well, our hearts certainly go out to you and to all of the people that are facing this terrible plight. Now, it should be noted that the Kurdish is a very diverse group of people. They live in five different countries. We're talking right now about the Kurdish province within Iraq, but there are also Kurds in Iran, in Turkey, in Syria,
and in Russia a little bit.
And in Russia as well. There are different religions. The majority are Muslim, but there are also Christians, Jews, and Yazidis, which is an ancient religion that predates both Christianity and Islam. And many of those trapped on the mountain are the ethnic group or the religious minority, the Yazidis. You were telling me in the lobby about the way that ISIS was able to infiltrate this city and take it over so swiftly. Can you tell our listeners what you were hearing about that?
My people call me and tell me, they first tell them, we are coming. Then they scare them. So most people, they kind of run away. And this when, like, the 1,000 people get together and run away. So beside they kill them, they get hurt and they get scared. And so as a group, like 1,000 people, they run away from the city. So, and then they come after who left. They cut their head off. They kidnap their daughters and wife.
And they're even killing fellow Muslims. They're doing this supposedly in the name of Islam, but yet they're killing everyone except Sunnis. Other Muslims.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel to hear these people doing these terrible atrocities in the name of Islam? You yourself are Islamic.
Yeah, I'm a Sunni Muslim, and it's hard to believe, really. It's hard to believe if they are what kind of religion they have or kind of people, but they say Ashhadu la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammad al-Rasulullah, which is the sentence we say it as a Muslim. So whoever said this sentence is a Muslim. So right now when they use this word, that means they using Islam and they do whatever they want, like killing people. Yeah, we Muslim, and a lot of Arab tribe who are Sunni, they believe them. And in Shingal, what happened in Shingal, there's two Arab tribes, they enjoyed them, and they went, I told them, this is Yazidi, and this is Shia, and this is Sunni. They didn't know who's Yazidi or Shia, because they're not from there. Mm-hmm. So these tribes tell them, and they go in after them, and they kill them.
Horrifying.
So they are saying we are Muslim, but we don't accept this kind of Islam.
So you denounce what they're doing. And the atrocities are mind-boggling. We've been hearing stories. You've confirmed some of these, I believe, from some of your own people back there, and also some of it has been in the international media as well, about mass graves. People buried alive in mass graves on that mountain, including children and women. Beheadings, torture. And now you were telling me about women and children being sold into the sex trade as well. Do you have any more details on that?
The last news I have from them, I called back home, they said they divide them in two groups. And one group is in near Mosul. And they house them in their place and they put them in there. And there is few women, they cook for them and they give it to them. They don't know after that what they're going to do them to that group. But the other group, which is in there, they took them to a village near Shingal, a place which they said they're going to sell these women to some Arab from different country.
So they're being sold to?
As a slave.
Arab men as slaves.
Yeah.
As slaves. Absolutely chilling. You told me that when they came into Shingal, that it wasn't like they just marched in there, that they had operatives who were in hiding among the people.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. There are a lot of them. They are everywhere.
ISIS.
ISIS, yeah.
Everywhere.
And I heard they are really educated people, so nobody know from there the way they are. They're not going to know. They're not going to have a suspicion that they are ISIS, you know. They think they're like normal people.
And you said they had disguises also.
Yeah, and they arrested a group a couple of days ago, and they found some fake beard and hair, which anytime they want to be ISIS, they wear those beard and long hair. And anytime they want to be like normal people in society, they take them out. So nobody...
How wide, do you have any handle on how widespread ISIS is, both in Iraq and beyond Iraq? If this is not stopped, how far could this go?
I think it's right now it's went too far. So everywhere, they are everywhere. I call them cockroach. They look like a cockroach, you know, and you cannot kill cockroach even if you would the nuclear weapon, you cannot get rid of cockroach. So
true.
These are everywhere, and it's hard to know how many there are there, but there are many.
Now, we are also hearing some stories of great courage and great bravery. There are people who have actually successfully, just in the last 24 hours, been able to go in and rescue a good number of those people who were trapped on the mountain. The numbers, again, the reports are varying all over. Some reports are saying a few thousand. I saw one that claimed it was as much as 45,000. We really don't know exactly, but a lot of people have been able to get out, and the largest rescue apparently was led by some Kurds from Syria who went in and blazed a path to freedom for many of the people that were trapped there. So we hope perhaps some of the people you know who were impacted will be among those that have found their way to safety.
Yeah, at the beginning of this conflict, the Kurdish from Syria, which called Yap, they were first one to go help these people on top of the mountain. But right now, all Kurdish from different part of world, like we have, like we mentioned, from five part, like Turkey, Iraq, Syria, and Russia, they become one, they are united, and which I think this is a powerful weapon. When people are united, they can fight with anything.
Right.
Yes.
Now, it's a very dangerous situation going in to rescue these people. The Kurds aren't the only ones who've been doing this. There have also been Iraqi helicopters airlifting some people out. Very crowded, desperate scenes on the news of people trying to get into the helicopter. A CNN reporter was on one that was overloaded. And unfortunately, there was a crash that we heard overnight. I'm recording this on Wednesday. Have you heard the latest about the helicopter crash? How many survivors or...
I know the pilot got killed, and one of the passenger who they rescued her from mountain.
So the pilot and one passenger.
Yeah, and the rest are injured. Three kids were like in bad situation.
Out of about 20 people or so.
Yeah, and the only Yazidi representative in the parliament, which is Diyan Khalid, was in there. She was there to talk to people and help them. And I think she's fine, but she's her leg was broken.
Oh, dear. And also, there was a New York Times reporter
who was
injured as well.
Yeah. They have only three helicopters, too. They're going back and forth.
Now, you have a brother who wants to join or is already in, is it the Peshmerga, which is a Kurdish fighting force trying to fight back and repel ISIS. What's the latest that you're hearing from your brother?
Yeah, I called back home yesterday, and they told me he's still waiting for a weapon, to get a weapon and go. But still, there is no weapon, because they said, on the news and everywhere, America is saying, we give Kurds weapons, but still, they just get some light one and some ammunition, but they not enough. Still, a lot of people wrote their name in the list, they volunteering, and one of them is my brother, but they don't have weapon to go. If they have weapon, we don't need any troops from any country. I believe our Peshmerga will be successful by themselves, but the only thing we need weapons.
Yeah, so your message to the world would be that more weapons are needed right away. The airstrikes obviously are not enough. It's a help, I would assume, but not enough. And so your message to Congress would be that more weapons are needed?
Yeah, my message to everybody, especially people, I think people have more power than Congress and anywhere. We need American people's support. You know, we've been like seven, this has been how many days is this going on, and we asking American President, Congress weapon, but they're still not giving us. But right now we need people's power.
And this is basically because U.S. law prohibits selling arms to any place that is not an independent nation. So it becomes kind of a catch-22 because Kurdistan is not an independent country as of now. And that brings us to the next part of the equation here, which is that the leader in Kurdistan, in Iraq, I understand, has come forward now and said that he would support a referendum for independence for the Kurdish province in Iraq to become an independent nation. Are you supportive of that effort? How big a difference would that make? And what do you think the prospects are of that actually happening, Amina?
I do support our independence. I think we deserve that because if you go back and see how Kurdistan, north of Iraq, like we have like developed, like we have become like a peaceful nation between all this chaos. And why we don't have weapons, because our leader, Masoud Barzani, said we wanted to show everybody we are peaceful people. We don't need weapons because we don't want to attack any other country. We want to live in peace. And until like a couple of days ago, still he wants to just, he said, I just want to defend my land and my people. I'm not going to go to fight for any reason. But then when they attack us, and what you see what happened to our woman and brother and sister, they all been
terrified.
And so that's why now we were asking for weapons, not because we want to after that go against any other nation, country. We just wanted to defend ourselves.
I have heard that the Kurdish people are the largest ethnic group in the world without their own nation. Is that true? How many Kurds are there?
Yes, that's true, and there are about 45 million people without country.
45 million people without a nation
without
of their
a
own.
Nation. The interesting thing for me, we all want to have our country, like this 45 million people want a country and nobody listen. And I think that's kind of strange, especially in this time we live in. It. Everybody deserves to have their home, their freedom.
Do you believe that an independent Kurdistan would be a strong ally for America and Europe in the region?
Yes, definitely. Right now, that's the only ally they have is Kurdish people.
Okay. Yeah. Now, there is a petition on whitehouse.gov calling for Kurdish independence. That's one thing listeners can do if they want to support that petition. There was also a rally staged right here in San Diego a couple of days ago where there were hundreds of local Kurdish people and others supporting the cause who came out. Are we seeing other rallies or protests outside of the San Diego area? Is this now a global cry for more to be done there?
Yes, there is a lot. Outside, all around America, there is a protest. There was one in L.A., and the day before was here, one here.
Mm-hmm.
So all around the world, there is a lot of rally, which they supporting independent. But because when we had this all rally scheduled, we were scheduled only for an independence. But then when this happened, we kind of mixed, everything is mixed right now. But we're still focusing on that, and we want to get that one.
And this is not the first time that the Kurdish people have faced a genocide or a terrible attack. Saddam Hussein gassed the Kurds. This must bring back terrifying memories for you.
When Saddam Hussein gassed Halabja, I was in Iran. I was a refugee in Iran. I was in Iran because of another war between Kurds and Saddam. But I remember what happened to Halabja because a lot of people, like right now, a lot of people from Shingal, they go.
What are you hearing as the latest from Shingal? How many refugees are there, and where are these particular refugees coming from, Amina?
There's many type of refugee in there. Before this, if you remember, they first captured Mosul, and there's a lot of Shia from Mosul and other, even Sunni who they didn't join ISIS, they came to Duhok. So beside them, we have a lot of other from Shingar. So there's a lot of them. And so when I asked them, they said, we don't know how many, but there's thousands of them.
From what you're hearing from people on the ground back there or other news sources you may have, Amina, do you think it's going to be possible for these displaced Kurdish people, including the Yazidis and others, to ever go home again? Do they want to go home, or do they want to find a safe refuge somewhere else in the world? Might they come here? What do you think the future holds for them?
Most of them, they don't have any hope, because when they talk to them, they said, we don't know what's going to happen to us. And all of them said, we cannot go back anymore. And the reason U.S. got is, I think most of them say that because they feel Iraq doesn't want them, because the way what they terrify them, they don't want to stay there anymore. They want to leave.
Now, we've just heard today that there's a movement to replace the Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki. Do you think that a change in Iraq's leadership could make any difference from the Kurdish point of view or not?
I hope, but I don't think so.
If nothing is done about ISIS, would you have any information? Are there ISIS operatives here in the United States, perhaps even here in San Diego?
I don't know that, but best news I heard from news, they know already, they only know 100 of them. But they said that probably there are more.
Yeah, that's a very frightening
thought. I don't know
if
they are still here or they went there to help them. I'm not sure where they are, but they're, from all these people, there are 100 of them American. So okay. I don't know how many of them are here or how many of them are there. So
yeah, we don't know, but it certainly brings up what a frightening scenario, what a frightening enemy the world is facing right now in these very, very violent people that are committing these atrocities.
Yeah. And they're very pretty sure of themselves. They think they're gonna take over everywhere.
Very chilling.
Yeah.
Amina, do you have some final thoughts for our listeners today?
Yes, I have something to say, and because we ask for weapons doesn't mean we are not peaceful people. You know, but right now we need weapons, and what I'm gonna say is that, like many people, I believe in the power of words. Not war, achieving peace through words and more beautiful results than weapons. But unfortunately, the conflict between Daesh, which is ISIS, and Kurds has changed my mind, and that hurts. We do not need American troops on Kurdish ground, but we need weapons, and not just ammunition and light weapons that Kurds are getting from the U.S. right now. We need more advanced, heavy weapons. But based on recent news I get from Kurdistan, we are currently only receiving light weapons and ammunition.
Amina, I want to thank you so much for coming here and sharing what must be very difficult stories, very difficult times for you, your family, and for all of the Kurdish people right now. Our hearts and our prayers certainly go out to you and your family and loved ones, and I thank you for joining us on the East County Magazine show today on KNSJ.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Bribery, conspiracy, illegal possession of firearms, those are among the 26 charges just filed against Jose Asano, the Mexican businessman alleged to have made illegal campaign donations to local politicians, including District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis, former San Diego Mayor Bob Filner, and Congressman Juan Vargas, whose district includes the southeast portion of East County as well as San Diego's border region and a portion of Imperial County. The United States Attorney previously alleged that Asano passed over $600,000 through straw donors. Charges were brought initially against his alleged partners in crime and included a lobbyist, a La Jolla car dealer, an online campaign service provider, and a San Diego police detective who did private security for Asano. But Asano himself had faced only one charge until now. Dumanis has said that she was unaware of the donations funneled to other groups backing her campaign and denies wrongdoing. Vargas has declined media interviews but has stated he would refund any donations associated with the case, as has Dumanis. Filner, who resigned and was later convicted on charges related to sexual harassment, has not commented publicly on the Asano scandal. None of the elected officials have been indicted. That could change, however. The new indictment alleges, among other things, that Ravneet Singh, who ran an online campaign service named Election Mall, Inc., gave a public official $1,000 in exchange for receiving classified and confidential information. Asano is also charged with carrying an unlicensed firearm. Carrying guns is illegal for foreign nationals who are here on non-immigrant status. In addition, the indictment reveals that Asano's operatives would set up private meetings with candidates, after which lobbyist Marco Cortes acted as an intermediary to provide financial support. Asano said his co-conspirators would then devise secret ways to finance these campaigns, the indictment states. Asano has claimed that the federal investigation was instigated by Sempra Energy, parent company of SDG&E, after Asano represented a rancher in a legal case against Sempra involving its liquefied natural gas plant in Mexico. The Voice of San Diego has reported that he also blamed the head of his security detail, former San Diego policeman Ernesto Encinas, for masterminding the campaign financing schemes. District Attorney Dumanis received over $200,000 in indirect donations for her failed mayoral campaign, including committees that supported her. Vargas benefited through $30,000 in donations, while Filner's mayoral campaign raked in a whopping $300,000, including independent committees and in-kind donations. Asano's operative also approached mayoral candidate Nathan Fletcher, but did not provide donations to his campaign. Asano met directly with Vargas and Dumanis, having a close enough relationship with Dumanis that she wrote a letter of recommendation for his son for college. The indictment lists 20 instances where Asano was not disclosed in campaign records as the source of the donation. It is illegal for a foreign national to contribute to a campaign in the United States. Of even greater concern than whether a candidate benefited from unauthorized donations, however, is whether any public official misused their elected office to provide favors to a wealthy foreign national, particularly a favor that compromises security through release of classified information. The indictment makes clear that one official did just that, though that official remains unnamed. Whether or not the identity of the official who sold classified material for money will be revealed during Asano's trial remains to be seen. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
A rash of controversy is occurring over a bill in Sacramento that would help poor mothers afford diapers for their children. And now the author of that bill, San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, has told 10 News that she has received threats over the bill. Assembly Bill 1516 would give $80 for diapers to every family with a child under 2 years old if that family qualifies for CalWORKS, which is the state's program to help welfare recipients get jobs. Turns out that the high cost of diapers prevents many parents from returning to work because most child care centers require that children wear disposable diapers. So cloth ones is not an option during working hours. And disposable diapers are expensive. Gonzalez says the bill is also to protect small children who at no fault of their own are in a poor family. In low-income households, studies have shown that some babies are more apt to suffer from health problems if their parents can't afford frequent diaper changes or are forced to reuse diapers. Last year, a peer-reviewed study in the journal Pediatrics found that a mother working full-time and earning the federal minimum wage would spend over 6% of her entire income on diapers, and if you have more than one child, even more. The study's four authors found that about a third of poor families were not able to provide their babies with adequate numbers of diapers, resulting in increased parental anxiety, stress, and negative effects on their baby's health, with an increase in diaper rashes and urinary tract infections. Since it began receiving publicity on national and local news, Gonzalez says she has received threats that are racist and sexist, some of a graphic nature she finds shocking. Some callers objected to the bill's cost. But Gonzalez says her bill saves taxpayers money by helping parents get back to work and off of welfare. The bill is the first of its kind in the nation. It passed the Assembly without a single Republican vote. East County's Assemblyman Brian Jones and State Senator Joel Anderson have both opposed the measure, though Anderson suggested he might have supported it if results could be proven and safeguards added to assure funds are only used for diapers. It is unclear how results could be proven, however, unless the bill is first enacted. San Diego's two women legislators, Shirley Weber and Toni Atkins, both voted in favor of the measure. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. A quarter of all school districts in California are failing to educate many children who don't speak English, according to figures obtained by the American Civil Liberties Union on the Department of Education's website. An East County Magazine investigation has found that three East County school districts made the list of the 15 districts with the worst record statewide for failing to provide services to English learner, or EL, students. That's according to a report titled Opportunity Lost, published by the ACLU in 2013. The Grossmont Union High School District is providing no services to 41% of its 3,784 EL students, the district reported. Tahisa Elementary School has 97 EL students, and 31% of them received no services, while Julian Union Elementary is failing to provide services to help 30% of its 46 English learner students. Statewide, over 20,000 English learner students were not provided language instruction, according to the state's website, although the Department of Education has disputed the accuracy of figures reported by some schools. Now, the ACLU filed a lawsuit over this. And this week, Superior Court Judge James Chalfant in Los Angeles has issued a ruling ordering the state to meet its own requirements and make sure that every single child in California receives an education. The judge emphasized that this is particularly important in a state where 20% of all students are deficient in English language skills, KPBS reported. Now, here in San Diego, home to immigrants not only from south of the border but around the world, the decision could have significant impacts. Mark Rosenbaum, chief counsel for the ACLU Foundation of Southern California, had this to say after the ruling. State educational officials had created a virtual caste system in which tens of thousands of children, nearly all of whom are U.S. citizens, were denied access to the bond of English language that unites us as Californians. Today marks an important civil rights leap forward for all students and all residents of the state.
This is Ed Beretta with some breaking news from the California Supreme Court. The High Court has ruled that California voters cannot vote on a ballot initiative asking their views on limiting campaign spending, at least not this November. Prop 49 was set to be on the November ballot. It would have asked voters if they think Congress should overturn the Supreme Court's ruling in the controversial Citizens United decision, which allowed virtually unlimited corporate spending on election campaigns. A constitutional amendment has been proposed to restrict corporate money in elections. But the majority on California Supreme Court sided with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, agreeing on a 5-1 vote that it needs more time to consider whether the advisory-only initiative is legal. Derek Cressman with the Money Out, Voters In campaign said, quote, "It's pretty chilling when the judicial branch cancels an election where the people are likely to vote against the judicial branch." Unquote. But Justice Goodwin Liu wrote that if the legislature wants to know what people think on an issue, it should commission a pollster instead of putting an advisory measure on the ballot. Ballot propositions should be limited only to language that would actually change the law. However, Chief Justice Tani Kanti Sakuye dissented. She objects to the state's high court depriving voters of the right to voice their views now, when the issue is being hotly debated.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our brand new studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Deborah Emerson with St. Madeline Sophie Center. She is the CEO over there. That is a center that helps developmentally disabled adults. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's just my pleasure to be here. It's such a great place to be, and I just appreciate the support from your radio station.
Well, thank you very much. We're always happy to help you do amazing work out there at St. Madeline's, which is right here in El Cajon, just down the street.
Yeah, we're just down the street. We serve over 400 adults with developmental disabilities. We have a variety of programs, and we call it a life program. People come to us after high school or another program like ours, and they usually stay the rest of their lives. So it's a life program.
We're going to talk in detail about some of those programs, but first, I understand you have a very exciting event coming up this Saturday, the 16th. Can you tell us about that?
Sure, I'd love to. It's Haunt with Heart. And it's our fashion show, and it's Fashion on Point. And we have every year this big fashion show. It's our 37th. Mm-hmm. And our students walk the runway. Also, our students will be performing arts. This year, we partnered with Rubio's Dance Studio and CYT. And our students did the play Grease. So they're going to be doing a medley of the Grease play songs at the fashion show.
Very good. And I've heard some of these students, they're amazingly talented. They can belt it out like Broadway.
Yes, they can. And they all want to be stars. So this is a new program for us. We've done dance, singing, and, you know, different components. Mm-hmm. Now we've been able to put it all together with a performance. So it's very exciting for our students.
Great. Now, the fashion show and the event, which is a fashion show and more, really, is going to be held down on the bay this year. Tell us about the location and the time and where people can get information on that.
Sure, I'd love to. It's down at the Hilton Bayfront. It's from 10 to 2. We have a lovely boutique shopping from 10 to 12.
That's this
Saturday, August 16th. And champagne is flowing, and it's just that energy there is so exciting, and all the people come fairly dressed up. You know, it's a fashion statement going on.
Now, who's providing the fashions, and can people come shop there and buy them?
A lot of the stores are boutiques, and Macy's helping us with our students and some of our other models. Mm-hmm. And there's some interesting designers that are having their lines come on the runway also. Leonard Simpson, this fashion guy, he provides all the fashions and the models for that component.
It sounds fabulous. I've been to this event in the past, and it's always just a lot of fun. And usually you also have a lot of really cool prizes that people can get tickets to win or bid on. What is it, both the silent auction and opportunity drawings this year?
Yes, we have silent auctions, and that usually is in the lobby. It's the presentation is just gorgeous. Then we have live auction, and then we have some raffle auctions also.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit for everybody.
Yeah. And I understand there's some big prizes this year.
Yes, there is. It's exciting. And so we're just excited to be down there. And next couple of years, we're going to be on our 50th anniversary. So we're kind of leading up to the 50th.
Wow. And what year is it here?
This is the 37th fashion show, but St. Madeline's will be around for 50 years.
And, oh, my goodness.
We're excited in 2016.
Congratulations. I'm looking at this list here, and I'm seeing Some of those prizes include $1,000 cash, Padre tickets, and a treasure chest filled with 50 wines. That's my personal favorite.
are all 90 points at least.
Well, our running joke is we're trying to soundproof the studio better, and we're looking to have people save their wine corks for us to cover the walls in wine corks. So that case would go a long way.
That would go a long ways.
Okay.
And then I'd like to thank our sponsors, if that was okay. Viejas, Verona, Sequan, the tribes really do sponsor us.
Very good.
And San Diego Home and Gardens, and SDG&E, Sempra, and our Women's Auxiliary is a huge support of ours, too, and our board and our committees.
Yeah, those are all very generous organizations that help a lot of the communities locally. Let's talk a little bit more about the good works that you're actually doing there at St. Madeline's. It's very innovative programs that you have out there that get these kids inspired to be involved in music and art and growing things out in the garden. Give us a few examples.
Sure. We have a pool out there. It's a junior Olympic size, so we have Special Olympics. And we've also opened it up to the public. We have people coming in with muscular dystrophy, arthritis. Also, Grossmont College uses our pool. And then we teach swimming lessons to babies on up. And also, we have a ramp for a wheelchair. And so we're one of the only ones that provide that service. Mm-hmm. And then our garden, we have a beautiful organic garden. I say it's a secret garden if you ever read that story.
It is. How many acres is that now?
The acreage on the garden is probably a little over 2 acres.
Yes.
And mostly succulents. And we also can do events and weddings in the garden. So we've done quite a few this year.
Beautiful. Well, maybe we'll come out and host a joint event with East County Magazine and St. Madeline's.
That would love to do that. Love to do that.
Beautiful. Yeah, and they do vegetables and flowers, and the latest addition is you have your very own
wine.
Vineyard.
Yes, we're really excited. It was just installed in March, about 300 vines.
Yeah.
Greg Manis helped us install it.
Right, Manis Vineyards.
Manis Vineyards. Mm-hmm. And we were just really supported with it, and it's very educational for our students and staff also. So it was just empty land, and it just brightened it up. It just gave it new energies.
It blossomed.
Literally blossomed, yes.
Yeah, there's also greenhouses. People can come out and actually go shopping at the nursery there for these fabulous plants, especially it has, I think, the best selection of succulent plants.
Yes,
it here
is.
In these water-thirsty times that you can find.
Yeah, we're open every day, 9 to 4, and also on Saturday we're open. So, like I said, once you get there, you will say, oh, I didn't even know this was here. And we have three big greenhouses.
And what is the address there?
It's 2119 East Madison Avenue. It's right off of Greenfield and Madison.
There you go. You also have the St. Madeline Sovies galleries. There's one in downtown El Cajon there at Main and Magnolia with beautiful jewelry and hand-painted chairs and furniture. I should have mentioned at the garden you can get Adirondack chairs and other things. And there's also a second gallery now in
Kensington. We just opened it up in Kensington. It's doing very well.
Very nice.
We partnered with the Autism Research Institute.
Oh, my.
And we just had a public show from last year's winner of Bounty of Art during HauntFest. She has a show up there right now.
Marvelous.
So we're open there every day from 12 to 7 and on Saturdays also.
And where is that one located?
It's right on Adams Avenue in about the third block.
What inspired you to get involved in this endeavor in doing such a wonderful job to help these disabled students, Deborah?
This month is my celebration of my 17th year, 19 years at St. Mads.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, I started as the accountant. I feel like I have the best of all worlds. I'm a big volunteer in many places in the community, especially when my children were growing up with sports and things like that. So for me, just helping people, I'm always extending myself in that way and trying to make a difference. And especially this group of people, they're very forgotten.
Yes.
And so they just need opportunity. Like I said, we were just doing performing arts. We had over 100 students try out an audition. They all want to be stars. And they're all very talented. And we could only support about 40 with the funding that we have. So you just see people that you didn't know could sing, dance, or do other things. And they just need a chance, just like us.
Yeah, it's truly heartwarming, like you say. So many of these kids, or later on adults, people don't understand that they have great potential. They may have a disability, but yet they can shine in other areas and have exceptional talents that we just need to find. And you have a remarkable talent for finding that and pulling that ability out of them and just putting those smiles on those faces. Is seeing that is really worth it when you go to one of your events.
Yes, I think if you come to the fashion show, I always say bring Kleenex because you'll be touched beyond, and you'll see stars too. There's a lot of stars up there.
Well, beautiful. Again, that event is
Fashion on Point, Haute with Heart, August 16th from 10 to 2 at the Hilton Bayfront. We still have plenty of tickets, so please join us in this very special event.
Very good. If people want to get tickets or they want more information about St. Madeleine Sophie's Center, what is the website where they can go?
STMSC.org.
As in St. Madeleine Sophie.org. STMSC.org. And the phone number for those who may not have internet.
Sure. 619-442-5129, extension 115. Ask for Neil.
Very good. And we also have an article up about the fashion show, a little preview on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. So if you're driving and you missed that, you can go to our site and just check in the People Power section or on our calendar, and you'll find that information.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
It's been a pleasure, Deborah. Thank you for joining us on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This week's Destination East County includes some festive options for these hot August nights, from concerts to a dive-in movie.
Major charitable events are also taking place, including a fashion show to benefit disabled adults in East County and an art lover's night atop Mount Helix.
Plus, we'll have a sneak preview of activities later this month, including Julian Starfest and the start of powwow season.
Stay tuned for all these events and more on East County Magazine's Destination East County.
This is Rebecca Williamson for East County Magazine.
And this is Leon Thompson bringing you the latest.
Families are invited to beat the heat on Wednesday evenings through the end of August by enjoying family ice skating nights for a nominal cost. It's all part of the Hot Croc Nights at the Salvation Army Croc Center at 6845 University Avenue, just one block west of La Mesa. In addition, the last dive-in movie of the season will be held on Wednesday, August 13th. You can float in the pool while watching a movie in an inner tube, provided free while supplies last. For cost and other details, visit croccenter.org.
Cajon Classic Cruise Nights continue each Wednesday night this month, including Cajon Cruises this Wednesday, August 13th, and Tea Buckets Galore next Wednesday, August 20th. For a full schedule of these free community events held on downtown El Cajon's Main Street, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce is hosting a Summer Bash Business Expo on Wednesday, August 13th from 5:30 to 7:30. You're invited to mix and mingle with local business owners at the La Mesa Community Center. For tickets and details, visit the La Mesa Chamber's website at lamesachamber.net.
Lemon Grove's Community Concert Series will feature the Bayou Brothers playing Cajun Blues on Thursday, August 14th. This free musical event takes place at Berry Street Park from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. For a full schedule of concerts, visit the City of Lemon Grove's website at lemongrove.ca.gov and click on events.
The movie Fast and Furious will be shown on the big screen at the Viejas Outlet Center Outdoor Theater on Friday night. The Viejas Outlet Center is located in Alpine, and showtime starts at 8 p.m. At the same time, in the Viejas Outlet's show court, every Friday night, a free multimedia performance titled Icons will be held. The show celebrates musical artists featuring water fountain jets, lighting, and music from popular soundtracks.
On Friday, August 16th, the USA Volleyball Cup will be held at Viejas Arena on the campus of San Diego State University. The U.S. will square off against Iran starting at 7 p.m. For ticket information, visit the Viejas Arena website.
The 7th Annual Heart, of Mount Helix will be held on Saturday, August 16th from 5:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. up in the park atop Mount Helix. This event features live music on two stages, visual artists at work, restaurant tasting, auction, a signature cocktail, craft beer, wine, and sunset views. For information on tickets and reservations, visit mounthelixpark.org.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to a twilight walk to learn about changes that occur as the sun goes down. The walk will be held on Saturday, August 16th from 7:30 till 9 p.m. The walk begins at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground parking lot and lasts about an hour and a half. For more information, visit mtrp.org.
The 37th Haught with Heart Fashion Show will be held on August 16th to benefit disabled adult programs for St. Madeline's Sophie's Center in El Cajon. This year's show will be held at the Hilton San Diego Bayfront, featuring boutique shopping, live and silent auctions, opportunity drawings, and a performance from the center's singers and dance troupe. For tickets and information, visit stmsc.org.
Cal Fire and Smokey the Bear will be visiting Lake Morena with their fire truck on Saturday, August 16th at 2 p.m. They will educate the public on fire safety, what to do when you're lost, and what not to do when building a campfire from scratch. Emergency vehicles will be on display, flashing their lights and shooting water out of their fire hoses. Bring a bathing suit or some attire you would not mind getting wet so the kids can play in the water. For details on this and other county park events, check out San Diego County Parks on Facebook.
Flamenco, jazz, classical, and popular music will be performed in a free guitar concert by noted musician Fred Benedetti on Saturday, August 17th at 3 p.m. in the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center Theater. This acclaimed entertainer plays with several local bands. He heads up the guitar studies program at Grossmont College and serves as chair of the guitar program at San Diego State University. He has toured in the U.S., Europe, North America, and Asia, performing locally with the San Diego Symphony and the San Diego Opera. Plus, he has shared the stage with such musical luminaries as opera star Luciano Pavarotti and jazz great Dave Brubeck. For information and a complete list of concerts, visit mtrp.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The annual Julian Star Fest will be held from August 21st through August 24th at the Mingini Winery in Julian. This includes a free public stargazing party at Saturday night on August 23rd. You can take a star tour of the heavens using the mini telescope set up in the viewing area. Experts will be on hand to answer questions about what you're looking at and about the telescopes. A flashlight is suggested for walking from the parking area to the event, which is sponsored by the San Diego Astronomy Association and Julian. For more information, visit julianstarfest.com.
The 44th Annual Barona Powwow will take place from Friday, August 29th through Sunday, August 31st at the baseball field on the Barona Reservation. The event features competitions among Native American dancers from across the nation, competing in events such as gourd dancing and fancy dance. You'll also find the Native American arts and crafts, food, and more. This event is free and open to the public. For more information, Google Barona Powwow.
The Aztec football team's season opener takes place on Sunday, August 30th at Qualcomm Stadium when the SDSU team squares off against Northern Arizona University. For tickets, visit GoAztecs.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSJ, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report.
The United States Fish and Wildlife Service has announced that no more genetically engineered crops or pesticides toxic to bees will be used at any national wildlife refuge across the country. This brings protection to wildlife in over 150 million acres of federal land, including refuges here in San Diego County. The Center for Food Safety, a consumer advocacy group, says the significance of this decision can't be overstated. Fish and Wildlife Service is the first federal agency to restrict the use of genetically engineered crops and neonicotinoid pesticides in farming in the United States. In an email sent to members, the center calls this action a long overdue step towards preserving our native ecosystems and their plants, bees, birds, aquatic animals, and other wildlife from the harmful effects of genetically engineered crops and pesticide use. It also shows that the grassroots and legal muscle of consumer groups is a force to be reckoned with, even for a powerful federal agency. For the past decade, the Center for Food Safety spearheaded 5 separate lawsuits challenging these harmful practices on wildlife refuge regions across the country and stopping them region by region. Because of these successful local actions, courts have concluded that genetically engineered crops on refuges endanger the very species and species that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services are tasked with protecting. So the Center for Food Safety filed nationwide legal petitions demanding the Fish and Wildlife Service stop the practice nationally. Now the consumer advocacy group is locked in a new court battle to next hold the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency accountable for its failure to protect pollinators such as bees and butterflies from these toxic pesticides.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.